Hello everyone, this is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'm reading for you today, in digest format, the QCWA Journal for the summer of the year 2010. The QCWA Journal is published four times a year by the Quarter Century Wireless Association, Incorporated. Their business office is located at P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, 01705. You can reach them by telephone at area 508-405-1930 or by fax 508-405-1965. And you can email the general manager at qcwagm@rcn.com. This recording is being produced by the Courage Andyham System in coordination with and the cooperation of the Quarter Century Wireless Association, Incorporated. It is for the use of eligible Handyham and QCWA members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. To introduce the magazine, the cover has a beautiful full-color photograph of various QCWA members aboard the motor ship Eurodom during the fall QCWA cruise. The cruise was a 7-day Eastern Caribbean cruise that departed from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with stops at the islands of Grand Turk, San Juan, Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, and a private cay before returning to Fort Lauderdale a week later. 170 hams and family members signed aboard Holland America's newest ship, the Eurodom. We'll give you some more details on that as we go along with this digest reading. But first, a quick review of the officers and the board of directors. The president, Bob Roski, call N0UF. Vice president, Ken Olke, BE6AFO. Secretary, Walter Supina, N3WS. Treasurer, Frank Harris, WA4PAM. President Emeritus, Harry Daniels, W2HD. Past President, John B. Johnson, W3BE. And General Manager, Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD. The Board of Directors, Leroy Baldwin, Val Irwin, Carolyn Harrison, Gary Harrison, Tony Hirsch, Larry McCalvey, William Pasternak, Ken Simpson. Our historian, Gary Harrison, call K0BC. Let's move now to our commentary from the President, Bob Roski, call November 0 Uniform Foxtrot and 0UF. Summer 2010. I hope you're taking time this summer to work on those antenna projects so you'll be ready for the fall QCWA QSO party on September 18th. Details are available in the journal and on our webpage at http://www.qcwa.org/2010-qso-party-rules.htm. Eddie Oder, call W0YMB. Resigned as a director in March, he was the longest-serving current board member, and I'll take this opportunity to thank him for his many years of service to QCWA at the national level. I know Chapter 6 will continue to benefit from Ed's membership. Thanks, Ed, ES73. The member elected by the Board of Directors to fill the remainder of Ed's term hardly needs an introduction. It's none other than past President Gary Harrison, call K0BC. The first board meeting I attended was as a director candidate in 1999 when Gary was president. My, how things have changed. On the 10 newest silent keys listed on our homepage, 6 are from Canada. I hope this just reflects the fact that our brothers and sisters to the north are better at reporting silent keys and not that they are really passing faster than their U.S. counterparts. 73 DE and 0UF OP Bob Roski, President, QCWA. Next up is our General Manager's Report. General Manager's Chuck Walbridge, call K1IGD for the summer of 2010. 75-year awards. It was very gratifying this year to provide 31 75-year awards. When you read the bios provided, you realize the broad spectrum of experience of these members. One element stands out, the number of them who started with a crystal set. That is expected when you realize when these members got their start. Thanks to each of you for your many years of service to AM Radio. Chapter Report Requirements. A reminder that the requirements for page count and number of photos per chapter report needs to be followed. We want to provide space for as many reports and other articles as possible within the pages we have available. Those numbers are posted at the bottom of the first page of the reports. Now, with emphasis, if you use Microsoft Works, please save the files as text or RTF. The native Works file format presents problems when converting them to a form usable for journal layout. The new document format for Word, and that's .docx, is also not compatible with the page layout program used. It requires an extra step to be converted to an acceptable format. Plan on saving those files in either text or RTF. The submission dates for reports is at the top of the heading page of the reports. Thanks for your cooperation with these issues. Now, regarding changes to bylaws. On February 28, 2010, the board voted to change QCW8 bylaws, Article 1, Membership Section 2, Item 3, as follows. From 3, publications such as the QCW8 Journal, Membership Directory, and Hotline Report may be purchased upon payment of the amount established periodically to cover costs of printing and mailing of the appropriate publications. 2. 3. Publications may be purchased. Please contact our general manager for price and availability. This is published in accordance with Article 9, Section 3. Notification to the membership 60 days prior to this change becoming effective, which will be September 1, 2010. Now, regarding address corrections or changes. On the back of your membership card is a statement about keeping headquarters informed of your current address. The post office sends notices to headquarters when a copy of the journal cannot be delivered, for which we pay 50 cents each. If you change your address, please let us know as soon as possible, since this action can facilitate a savings for QCWA. There is a link on the webpage that allows you to send to headquarters your address change and your call sign as well. Now, regarding new member products. Over this past year, several new items were introduced for sale to our members. Talks continue with present vendors and new ones in an effort to expand items available to our members. The fall issue will introduce some new products. Keep watching. You will be pleased. With respect to Freedom Team Salute. In our last issue, we featured an article by Bob Peters called W1PE. Bob was involved with a program whose goal was to thank the members of the Army for their years of service. Just when the journal had been released to the printer, Bob contacted me with the news that the Department of Army had terminated the program. Needless to say, Bob and his volunteers were very disappointed with this decision. If you would like to follow up with Bob, he can be contacted at the following email, w1pe@arrl.net. Jan and I wish to thank all who stopped by the booth in Dayton. Those visits are mini reunions. We hope you had a great time then and that you are looking forward to a splendid summer. 73, Chuck and Jan. And before we close the general manager's report, there is a photo credit relative to the cover photo for the Spring 2010 journal. It was used by permission of the photographer, Kench Weresinch. Thank you for the photo. The report is signed Chuck, K1IGD, General Manager. Ladies and gentlemen, before we get into the meat of the issue, there is a commentary here titled Publicity, Public Relations, and the Lost Member Column. It's submitted by one of our directors, Larry McAlvey, called WA9JMO. 2 days after my QCWA Spring 2010 journal arrived, I received an internet-transmitted audio computer file from Robert Zeta and on BLF containing an hour reading of selected portions of the journal. Bob has been working with Vic Culver, called W4VIC, and Handy Hamps to bring a quarterly audio recording of select portions of our journal to our visually impaired members. The tape includes the chapter reports of the 15 chapters whose members have requested this service. The articles from the President and General Manager, plus other journal items that might be of interest to all readers. But I notice 8 chapters that would normally have their report read could not be included in this issue's taping because an article from their chapter was not submitted. Bob produced a very professional tape that was easy listening and very understandable. I wonder if there are other chapters or members not associated with the chapter that could benefit from this outstanding service. Please give it some thought and let me know. If there is a need, we can try to fill it. In response to a statement I made in the Spring Journal column that the future of amateur radio and QCWA are with our young people, and that we need to cultivate their interest, hone their skills, and plant the seed of desire, so they will grow into the active hams our hobby needs to continue. Ken Mugley, called K0HL, sent me a 32-slide PowerPoint presentation titled Jobs for the 21st Century. Ken's approach is through the education opportunities offered in our school system. The field of electronics can provide good careers for our children. Amateur radio and its role in introducing children to electronics can lead to careers in engineering and technical support in the telecommunications industry. The SLIDE program is designed for school boards and parent-teacher associations, groups that would be more inclined to accept these ideas and helps bring them to reality than might school administrators who feel that they are overburdened with what they currently have. The American Radio Relay League, the ARRL, has a couple of companion programs that seem to fit nicely with what Ken has set up. One is titled Teachers Institute on Wireless Technology, a one-week in-residence learning opportunity designed for motivated teachers and other school staff who want to learn more about wireless technology and in bringing that knowledge to their students. It is run and funded by the American Radio Relay League. My first presentation of this material will be to my local chapter to see how many of them would like to join me as I take the show on the road and try to interest a couple of private schools into trying the concept. It should be an enlightening experience. What follows now is the Quarter Century Wireless Association Award winner's commentary. It's always a pleasure to recognize these outstanding achievements by both ladies and gentlemen who are part of this great organization, the Quarter Century Wireless Association. Carol B. Ben Miller, call W0DKL, 80-year award. The following are 75-year awards. Ken Glazer, W1KAY, Donald Campbell, W2ND, Bill Finch, W4EHF, David Allen, W5KV, Wally Nelskog, W7FDQ, William Dealey, W8YA, Seymour Psy Greenberg, WB4VMP, Don Johnson, now a silent key. April 14, 2010. Don Johnson, called W6AAQ, was awarded a 75-year award this spring. Don had been continuously licensed since 1935. Don became an SKI on April 14, 2010. And also pictured here in black and white photograph, Al Taylor, VE3WV, a 75-year award. The photograph appearing here, Tim Pekkanen, Victor Echo 3 Uniform Oscar, presenting the QCWA 75-year award to Al Taylor, Victor Echo 3 Whiskey Victor, at the March 17th meeting of the Quinte Amateur Radio Club in Belleville, Ontario. Let's take a look now at the Quadessentially Wireless Association Cruise Convention, which was back there on October 24 through 31 of the year 2009. This article is submitted by Larry McCalvey, WA9JMO. Our 2009 convention was an outstanding 7-day Eastern Caribbean cruise adventure that departed from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with stops at the islands of Grand Turk, San Juan, Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, and a private Cay before returning to Fort Lauderdale a week later. 170 hams and family members signed aboard Holland America's newest ship, the Aerodom, and enjoyed, thanks to Icon Radio operating the IC-7600, IC-7200, and IC-7000 during the entire trip. NGC Company provided a Comet CHA-250B vertical antenna, and HRO Radio in Oakland, California lent us a DXCC 80-10 dipole, an array of hamsticks, and several hundred feet of RG-8X transmission line. It took a day and several movements of antennas and radio locations before the perfect spot was chosen. At the rear of Deck 11 was a 25-by-10-foot hallway with a stairway to Deck 10 and entrance doors on each end of the hallway. A table and chairs were quickly gathered, and with 110 volts of AC power available in a wall socket, call W2MM, Whiskey 2, Mike Mike, the QCWA Memorial Call, was on the air. A 10 a.m. meeting between the beverage manager, Chris Bruno, and I coordinated the QCWA week's daily events. A registration table was set up near the main hotel desk that allowed easy access for our group to retrieve their name badges, holders, convention pins, and special Arecibo Observatory tour wristband. The room location for our 9 onboard forums was established, and the 2-group cocktail parties were coordinated. Speaking of our onboard forums, I'd like to thank my call WB8CIN, for setting up and coordinating the events. They ran about 45 minutes each during the morning hours on our 2 full days at sea. They were, 1, Radio Astronomy in the VLA and Green Bank Observatory, presented by Bud Russell, call W8GBH. The second forum, Search for Amelia Earhart's Airplane, was presented by Rod Bloxham, call K0DAS. The third forum, IOTA, presented by Harry Hodges, W6YOO. The fourth one, QRP and More, presented by Jim Fitton, W1FMR. The second C-Day, we enjoyed the fifth forum, HF Amateur Radio Remote Control, presented by Rich Huseman, N6DQ. The sixth one, new high-speed 24 megabytes per second packet radio, presented by John Kemper, K8OCL. Seventh form, ISS Contacts, presented by Ken Olke, VE6AFO. And the eighth form, used equipment and basic things to look for when buying new gear, presented by Hal Goretsky, K6DPS. And the ninth form was about the 2008D expedition to Christmas Island, which was T32, presented by Rod Bloxham, K0DAS. One XYL, a non-ham, said she sat through all the forums and thought they were very interesting and most informative. I had to agree with her statement, and I would also like to extend my personal thanks to all of the presenters for their time and sharing their knowledge with the group. Well done. One of the pre-cruise highlights was the anticipated trip to the Arecibo Observatory in San Juan, Puerto Rico, home of the world's largest and most powerful telescopes for radar and radio astronomy. We arrived in San Juan on the last Tuesday of October. The observatory is closed to visitors on Mondays and Tuesdays. Knowing this from a previous visit in 2001, I had contacted the observatory a year prior to our cruise date to see if, one, they would open the observatory for a special tour for us, and two, if so, would we have access to the same views that tourists observe during normal visiting hours, and three, could the observatory assist us in transportation to and from the Arecibo complex? I talked with Hector Camacho, the visitor center's director. Hector said yes to all my requests, and we began a 12-month email correspondence, fine-tuning what turned out to be a most spectacular and very interesting tour of this wonderful complex. The next day, we arrived in San Juan, U.S. Virgin Islands, thanks to the effort of Ron, KP2N, and Rita, NP2AA, Hall, who arranged for the Virgin Island Radio Club members to meet our ship at the dock and greet our group as we stepped off the ship. There were three or four tables in an outside restaurant patio the Virgin Island Hams commandeered that allowed our group to visit with them as we headed in to the heart of St. Thomas Shopping and when we returned. They were a very nice group of hams. I know I enjoyed the visit, and from the comments I heard, so did everyone who shared the visit. The ship made two other island stops, one in Grand Turk for water activities and shopping, and the other at a private cay called Half Moon Cay for additional water activities, lunch, and beach time. The onboard radio operation began late Saturday afternoon on the 24th of October, with the ICOM 7600 set up on the rear deck 10 and a Comet CH250B vertical mounted to a railing up the stairway on deck 11. It seemed to work well until the band set up a few feet from the station. Anyone contacting the ship and wishing a certificate of contact was asked to send a QSL card to Gary Harrison, K0BC, requesting the no-cost certificate. My thanks to Gary. He made and sent over 50 beautiful certificates with a very short turnaround time. Two members from my chapter 162 received them and commented on how quick the response was, less than a week after they sent a request. The group enjoyed two private cocktail parties during the afternoons of the 2 days we were at sea. And besides the fine finger food and beverages we consumed, courtesy of Holland America, at the conclusion of the cruise and after all the expenses were paid, there remained $2,400 in the cruise fund, since the funds were originally paid by our QCWA cruise group. It is only fair that anything left should be returned to those folks. According to Holland America, there were 150 of our group members eligible to participate in the tour conductor credit. I have the sign-out list and will send the rebates as I confirm the mailing addresses. I would like to thank everyone that traveled with us, the presenters, ICOM Radio, HRO of Oakland, and Comet Antenna, Mike Hall, WP8ICN, and Gary Harrison, W0BC. For making this a fun adventure. This was the third convention cruise working with Holland America and White Travel Service, and for me, it was the best. Well, folks, this is Bob, your reader. Most of you probably know that this trip, this cruise on the Caribbean, and the wonderful commentary that we just talked about, was actually sort of taking the place of the 2010 National Convention for the QCWA. Now, next year, the year 2011, the National Convention will be hosted by members of the New England chapters. The chapters involved are Yankee Chapter, number 112, which is the host, Pine Tree Chapter, number 134, Twin State Chapter, number 146, Nutmeg Chapter, number 149, Pioneer Chapter, number 183. You'll be getting updates about all of this on the QCWA and the Warwick Providence Convention and Visitor Bureau websites pretty soon. So mark your calendars for September 9th to 11th, 2011. And for more information, you could contact the QCWA chapter, Yankee chapter number 112, which is hosting the whole event. Their address is P.O. Box 403, Bolton, B-O-L-T-O-N, Massachusetts, M.A., 01740. Or you can email the following lowercase, a call sign, WB6VVA at ARRL.net. You could also email DMSwenson52 at Comcast.net. And while we're in the category of talking about future events, we certainly don't want to forget commentary relative to the Orlando Hamcation, which is also, of course, in the year 2011 now, the Amateur Radio and Computer Show. It's at the Central Florida Fairgrounds, 4603 West Colonial Drive, Orlando, Florida, 32801. That's in the good old winter time down in Florida, February 11, 12, and 13. Amcation, of course, is one of the biggest events in the amateur radio community in the United States. So if you want to kick off the year nicely with amateur radio activity, and you're down in the Orlando, Florida area, it's really a great take. You'll see latest equipment, swap table deals, bargains at the largest tailgate area in the Southeast. There are transceivers, mobile rigs, HTs, amps, antennas, call letter hats, wire parts, all of it. And you're still probably getting a nice little suntan at the same time, while others of us freeze up here in the north and in upper western part of the United States. Something to think about. That's going to be the Orlando Hamcation. February 11, 12, 13, 2011. I also want to pause for a few moments to emphasize the need for membership renewals. Oftentimes, as we advance in our years, we forget some of our obligations, if you will, to support the wonderful organization that we're involved with, the Quarter Century Wireless Association. There's also a wanted poster here, QCWA members. Place your ads here for free. Did you know you could actually place ads in the magazine, the journal? If you have something to sell, look for a part, manual, book, or whatever. Take advantage of your membership and send your ad today to the business office, QCWA Incorporated, P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, zip code 01705. Or you can email the general manager at qcwagm@rcn.com. We think that a lot of you folks don't realize that if you have something you would like to put an ad for, it's free. It goes along with your membership. So get involved, and don't forget to continue to support the QCWA by renewing your memberships on a timely basis. And we thank you for that. It's time now for the chapter reports. Remember, there is a reminder here. Please send the reports to Chuck Walbridge, General Manager, to arrive no later than the following dates. January 1 for the spring issue, April 1 for the summer issue, July 1 for the fall, and October 1 for the winter issues of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal. Reports received later than the deadline may not be published in the journal. And as we begin, I give you another gentle reminder that if you have any of the sight-impaired or print-impaired individual members of the Quarter Century in your chapters, it's really your responsibility to inform us that they would like a copy of the audio that we produce here for the accommodation of those members. We begin today with Chapter 8, Upper Midwest, Minnesota. With 18 members and guests present, including QCWA National Director Baldwin, W0OFY, the January meeting was called to order at 12.03 p.m. 50-year continuously licensed awards were presented to W0JBX and W0DKL. An interesting presentation was given by several members of the Backend Amateur Radio Society about communication support for the MS-150 bike race. The March meeting opened with 15 members and guests present. It was reported that Jim Stodolka, W0TIV, is in a nursing home in Arden Hills. Chapter 8 will have a table at the Midwinter Madness Hamfest next weekend. Keys, Keys, Keys was the title of N0UF's presentation, as he displayed about 25 telegraph keys dating back from a 1906 Vibraplex original to a 2003 Vibraplex Double Key Deluxe. The presentation included bugs and keys and a telegraph sounder or two. Bob even had a telegraph switching panel made by Brunel that had last seen service in the main railroad station in Ecuador. Some of the differences between American and international Morse code were discussed. A short history of landline telegraph was also featured. This is about 10% of Bob's collection. The Chapter 8 table at the Midwest Madness Hamfest was a success, with one new member signed up for the national organization, one national renewal, and four new Chapter 8 members. The Chapter 8 Upper Midwest File Report by Bob Roski and Zero UF Secretary. Let's head a bit west now to Chapter 63, Oklahoma. Because of weather conditions, our Oklahoma Chapter 63 meeting scheduled for January 30, 2010, was held on Saturday, February 27, 2010, at the Hometown Buffet. There were 9 members and guests in attendance. After the brief business meeting, there were 2 outstanding presentations made. Ron Crone, W5CFN, told about his trip to Bolinas, California, to the site of the KPA transmitter that was used for years for maritime communications and now is being restored to preserve this bit of history. There he met and visited with Richard Dillman, called W6AWO, a founding member of the Maritime Radio Historical Society. The acronym is MRHS. Ron and his brother Dan Crone, W6SBE, picked up Bob Schrader, W6BNB, at his home in Sebastopol, California, and took him to Bolinas to view the transmitter and learn from Bob many historical facts and details. Bob Schrader is the well-known author of the 6 editions of the book Electronic Communication and a number of other books. As a part of the tour, the visitors sat around the table and listened to the story of the station's history. This gathering was referred to as Church of the Continuous Wave. Today, the former KPH facilities are part of the Point Reyes National Seashore, where the receiver is located. The KPH transmitter is about 17 miles south of Point Reyes in Bolinas. For those interested, more history is available on http://www.radiomarine.org. Then our president, Skip Amos, N5CFM, who refurbishes and restores keys and bugs, showed us how he was able to restore the silver contacts on keys. He passed around some samples of some of his work with keys. A picture of a 1930s key accompanies this article. It's very nicely defined in black and white on the page 22 of this report. The report for the Oklahoma chapter was filed by Lyle Amos, W5SJC, Chapter 63 board member. We move now to Chapter 65 in Buffalo, New York. Chapter 65 continues to meet the second Saturday of every month, year-round, for 12 noon lunch at Brennan's Bowery Bar and Grill in the Transit Plaza, Main and Transit, on Route 78, just west of Buffalo, New York. This is the same establishment that was in the old Radio Row district of New York City and relocated with furnishings and memories to the western New York area prior to the construction of the World Trade Center. Visiting hams are always welcome. We are now averaging 15 to 20 persons in attendance. With the summer tourist season now in full swing, we especially welcome those visiting Niagara Falls and nearby Canada to stop by our second Saturday luncheons on the way through the area. We're just minutes north of the Depew exit off the New York State Thruway, which is I-90. Member Jim Hain, W2IMY, highlighted our February meeting. Jim operates on several of the amateur satellite modes. He presented a most interesting overview of amateur radio satellite operation today. For those not yet involved, Jim gave us hints on how to use satellites for amateur radio. A July 10th meeting will feature a detailed presentation on the man many claim was the world's first amateur radio operator, Nikola Tesla, who went silent key. In 1943, was a scientific pioneer in electricity and many of the concepts that preceded computers, radio, satellites, and missile science. Although based in New York City, much of Tesla's practical work in electricity was here in the Niagara frontier. A giant statue of him is on Goat Island at Niagara Falls. We'll be talking about his work in Western New York and, of course, the connection with amateur radio. Please join us and be surprised. We thank Bob Rooney, WAET, Secretary for Chapter 65, Buffalo, New York. Well, we're going to head southwest again, all the way down to Austin, Texas, for Chapter 67's reading. Chapter 67 is pleased to report that attendance continues to improve as we have enlisted new members. Our regular monthly meetings are held on the third Saturday of each month at the IHOP on U.S. Highway 183 in Northwest Austin. We generally have a social hour and lunch prior to our regular business meeting, which starts at 2 p.m. At the conclusion of the business meeting, we generally have a program presented by a member or invited guest. In December, we held our annual Christmas gift exchange and had no business meeting. This was strictly a social event. At our February 2010 meeting, Bob Farmer, W9BF, gave a very informative presentation entitled A Perspective on 6 Meters. Bob had lots of information regarding the quirks of the 6-meter band. Our March 2010 meeting was highlighted with a presentation on self-preparedness by Roger Wines, called W5WIA. Roger described many ways to prepare ourselves and our families for such things as weather disasters, power disruptions, and terrorism. He also reported on the many training sessions that are conducted in the Austin, Texas area that help to prepare for unforeseen events. This report was filed by Milt Cram, W8NUE, Secretary for Chapter 67, Austin, Texas. Well, we're heading back north to our lovely friendly neighbor from Canada. Chapter 70, the Quarter Century Wireless Association, National Capital Region, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Chapter 70 membership continues to remain constant at a level of about 85, with Jim Thiessen, VA3KV, welcome as our first new member for 2010. During January, February, and March 2010, our popular weekly breakfasts at the Summer Haze Restaurant continue to be well attended. In addition, a lunch and business meeting was held on February 16th. Several of our older members find it difficult to get out to evening dinner meetings in midwinter, as driving can be treacherous in Ottawa at that time of year. The luncheon meeting was quite successful, and we had a good turnout. After lunch, Chapter 70 member Jack Belrose, VE2CV, gave an interesting and entertaining talk on the subject of small electric magnetic antennas. He described the controversy over the effectiveness of the so-called crossed field antenna composed of an electrically small dipole and a small loop. He showed the results of near and far field radiation measurements made at the Canadian Communications Research Center, which conclusively demonstrated the very low efficiency of the antenna. This year, the executive decided to produce personal membership certificates for all current Chapter 70 members, and those who were present at the luncheon received their new certificates. The remainder of the certificates will either be handed out at the next scheduled dinner meeting in May or mailed to those unable to attend. Sadly, during the first quarter of 2010, Chapter 70 lost two very well-liked members, as Fred Green, VE3IO, and Bill Wilson, VE3NR, became silent keys. Fred was well-known for his pioneering work in building and driving electric cars, while Bill, who for much of his working life was a senior executive in the regulatory and spectrum management field in our federal government, was much appreciated for his support of the amateur service over many years. The Chapter 70 report was filed by Ken Palfer, VE3PU, Secretary. We go now to Chapter 112, Yankee, in the state of Rhode Island. The Yankee Chapter 112 held their winter meeting at O'Connor's Restaurant, Worcester, Massachusetts, on February 13, 2010, with 14 members and guests, 9 members from Yankee Chapter, and 5 members from Pioneer Chapter. Norm Gregory, president of Pioneer Chapter, presented Tom Duffy, K1JHC, with his 50-year award. A presentation was made by the Worcester area representative Alex Dunn of the Audubon Society about birds and their migratory patterns. Our next meeting will be our annual meeting on April 17, 2010 at the Chateau Restaurant in Norton, Massachusetts. I had the opportunity to join a ham radio group from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and a group from Maine on a cruise to the Caribbean from February 27, 2010 to March 7, 2010, called the Ham Radio Cruise 2010 aboard the Carnival Freedom cruise ship. We had two stations going and two Tar Heel screwdriver antennas, one on each end of the Lido deck. It was great. I worked six U.S. stations, including San Juan, Puerto Rico, Ireland, Guyana, East Coast of Canada, St. Croix, and Spain. It was a lot of fun hamming on the ship. This group was formed by Vernon, W4THN, of Virginia Beach, Virginia. We visited San Juan, Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, Tortola, Antigua, and Nassau, Bahama. We had good weather except for the evenings when the seas were rough. This report is filed by Janice Lance, call K4IJK, Secretary for Chapter 112, Yankee, State of Rhode Island. And that report is followed quickly by Chapter 119, Tidewater, Virginia. New elections for our team included Vic Culver, W4VIC, as president, Al Crawford, WA4TCJ, as vice president, Quint Webb, K4CQW, as secretary, and Barry Pretty, K5VIP, as treasurer. Winter arrived in the Tidewater area with a mouthful of teeth, although the rest of the country was also under siege with bad weather. We had a snowfall of 7 inches in one day that paralyzed our region. The weather had a major impact for our Chapter 119 members who were planning to attend the Richmond, Virginia Amateur Telecommunications Society sponsored Frost Fest. QCWA 119 had planned to have a table and recruit new members during the event. Mother Nature, with ice and treacherous roads, made this a non-event for our team. Our monthly meetings continue at Frankie's Place for Ribs in Virginia Beach. We have great participation, averaging 20 to 30 members per meeting. A lot of mouths to feed. Our programs this quarter started with the January meeting and a presentation concerning global warming presented by Dick Harrell, W4RBH. Dick presented some data that really does challenge a mountain of data generally accepted as the foundation for global warming concepts. The February meeting included a presentation by our chapter president, Vic Culver, W4VIC, with selected shorts from the F-O-0-AAA Clipperton Island 2000 D-Expedition. Our March presentation by Chapter Secretary Quint Webb, K4CQW, addressed a rapid-growing Strait Key Century Club, a group of slow to medium-speed Morse code operators with over 6,000 members. Google SKCC for in-depth details, if you'd like. Speaking of Morse code, our chapter president, Vic Culver, W4VIC, has been conducting code classes to help some of our members roll back into the true mode of communications. To that point, we are starting a CW slow speed net for our members to further fine-tune this old but true method of communications. March was the month for the Virginia CUSO party, and our chapter representation turned out in good numbers. Chapter 119 has its own certificate award program, honoring the on-air achievement among chapter members and friends participating in this event. Our QCWA members were well represented on board the battleship USS Wisconsin, BB-64, during the Wisconsin CUSO party. Note that our chapter secretary, K4CQW, was operating CW from the ship. We invite you to come and join us on Sunday mornings. Our net is at 8 a.m. Eastern Coast Time on 3.947 kilohertz. Pick up some new QCWA numbers and enjoy the fellowship. With spring in the air, birds chirping, and flowers blooming, it is time to turn to antenna projects and getting ready for Field Day 2010. Live life to the fullest. It is later than you think. See you on the air. That was signed by Quint Webb, K4CQ. UW Secretary of Chapter 119, Tidewater, Virginia. Let's move north again now to Chapter 149, Nutmeg, the Connecticut chapter. The winter meeting and luncheon of the Nutmeg chapter, Chapter 149, was held at Serafino's Restaurant in Wallingford, Connecticut, on February 13, 2010. 33 members and guests enjoyed a quarterly gathering, thanks to the efforts of chapter member Al Cohen, W1FXQ. Our QCWA chapter was treated to another great presentation and discussion. Guest speaker Jim Smith, executive editor of the New Britain Herald and the Bristol Press in Connecticut, read excerpts and spoke about his first novel, Wah Say Len, a romantic and adventurous story of the American Revolutionary War era, about a fictional, attractive, young Indian woman involved in real historical events that include George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Lafayette, and the Seneca Indian Nation of the Iroquois Confederacy, who were allies of the British. At least six members of the audience bought autographed copies of the book, which is published by Plains Weed. I'll spell that, PlainsWeede, Plains Weed. Smith also discussed his career of 40 years as a journalist and the challenges facing journalism in today's world. The Nutmeg chapter received the report and recommendations from its nominating committee for 2010-2011 chapter officers. The nominated officers will be formally elected at the annual meeting scheduled for May. That report was filed by Steve Ewald, E-W-A-L-D, call WV1X, secretary for chapter 149, Nutmeg, Connecticut. Well, we're heading west again up to good old Utah, chapter 160, Utah. Our early activity started with our picnic and evening dinner at Mesquite, Nevada. Our picnic, once again, was held in the city park. A share a snack lunch and Ned Stevens, W7ELP, world-famous hot dogs, were served. A short business meeting was held where suggestions were fielded on upcoming events. The biweekly breakfast in St. George will continue on the first and third Wednesdays at the local Denny's restaurant. Meetings are in the planning stage for the northern part of the state. They will occur in the summer. One of our members, Dave, W7KDR, presented Don Ming, WP7F of St. George, his 75th year certificate for his service to amateur radio. He obtained his license at the age of 16 in 1935. He served in the U.S. Army as an instructor in code and electronics during World War II. He then was engaged in employment in Southern California in electronics until he retired to St. George, Utah. He then taught ham classes in a middle school and was known as an outstanding technician. Dave then presented to Bob Peterson, W7UT, also of St. George's 55-year certificate. Bob was 15 when he was first licensed, was on the air with the good old 6L6. After that, 3 years in the Army Security Agency as a Morse intercept operator. Then after college, he embarked on a civilian career with the United States government that provided overseas assignments as a telecommunications officer to various U.S. embassies around the world. He and his wife, Linda, moved to St. George in 1999. His major ham radio interests are DXing and contesting. He holds some very impressive awards. After the picnic, we took a break to gather for dinner at the beautiful dining room at Falcon Ridge Hotel Golf Course. A good time was had by Hall, and with plans for the dinner for the north end of the state, and again here in Mesquite in the spring, it will be another good year for our chapter. Chapter 160, Utah. The author here is Dave, W7DKR. Now for the final chapter that requested a reading for the print and sight impaired, Chapter 203, Gil Crossley Chapter, Pennsylvania. The Central Pennsylvania Chapter 203, the Gil Crossley Chapter, held its winter luncheon meeting on Saturday, February 13th in State College, Pennsylvania. The meeting speaker was Bud Vols, W3SMV. Bud discussed the early days of amateur and commercial radio at the Pennsylvania State University. Bud explained that Gil Crossley, W3YA, our chapter's namesake, was one of the key people in the early days of radio at Penn State. Everyone had a great luncheon. The next meeting of Chapter 203 is the spring meeting on May 8 in Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania. Chapter 203 operates a weekly net on the State College 146.85 MHz repeater. The net is held Sunday evenings at 8:30 p.m. local time, that's Eastern Time. All comers are welcome. The net has rotating net control stations. So there we've completed the requested recordings for the different chapter readings that are being used for those who cannot read them for themselves. So any of you who are listening along with other members who cannot read the material, please encourage your friends and bystanders alone who are involved with QCWA to furnish the names of other AM operators or members of the organization at any rate who would enjoy the opportunity of listening to a digest format reading of the quarterly journals. Well, for you dear listeners, I'm going to complete the recording in this session of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal for Summer 2010 with a very interesting story titled QCWA Expedition to Tangier Island. The author here is Quint Webb, K4CQW. It's edited by Vic Culver, W4VIC. First, a prologue. This narrative, serialized in three parts, describes the events leading up to and subsequent activities involving QCWA Chapter 119 members and friends of Chapter 119 in executing a plan to activate Tangier Island, Islands on the Air, that's IOTA, designation NA-083-, as a special event during the Chapter 119 30th anniversary year. The event was designed as a mini-expedition, and participation was planned for the annual IOTA contest. Tangier Expedition, Part 1, The Preparation. The Tangier Island event was proposed as a special event activity for Chapter 119's 30th anniversary year. A team of eight members and friends of Chapter 119 enthusiastically volunteered for this operation. Team members included Vic Culver, W4VIC, Barry Pretty, K5VIP, Tally George, W4TVG, Butch Burke, KE4AZL, Quint Webb, K4CQW, Terry Huntskiller, KI4RXC, Joe Duchesne, KI4RKB, and Steve Batten, W4XQ. The team members worked out the details of this event in several planning meetings. Tangier Island is a small waterman community located 60 miles north of Norfolk, Virginia, and dead center in the Chesapeake Bay, 20 miles or so from the Virginia Eastern Shore and 20 miles east of mainland Virginia. There are no amateur radio operators inhabiting the island. Readers are encouraged to conduct an online Google search and get a comprehensive overview of the community. Suffice it to say, the people of Tangier are a unique community, settled by Englishmen from Cornwall, England. The inhabitants still speak Cornwall English. That is to say, you can barely understand them when they talk to you, and you can't understand them at all when they are talking to one another. Our team composition changed as the operation date approached, expanding the team to 10 members. Ron Young, W8RJL, pilot station, and Park Slater, N4KFT, who help establish reliable two-meter communications with the expedition from Gloucester, Virginia, were added to the expedition as support personnel. Ron and Park remained behind in support of operations while the other eight team members traveled to Tangier. The logistics support for this effort was a large undertaking. We activated three HF and one VHF station with supporting antennas, Carolina Wisdom 80, 40-meter dipole, 35-foot Air Force vertical, 3-element tri-band Yagi, and a 2-meter Yagi, along with all of the support power supplies, amplifiers, gears, laptops, etc. Clearly, this load could not be transferred via a pedestrian ferry boat, the only access to the island. The early plan foresaw this eventuality, and one of the first expeditioners recruited was Terry Hunsicker, K-I-4-R-X-C, who owns a 27-foot sailboat named Do You Wanna. Terry was up for a sailing adventure and readily agreed to serve as captain of the transport vessel, and this is where this story really begins. Terry also offered up his workplace warehouse for our inventory checkout. The pre-load inspection went well. We had everything we needed, and we were thus ready for the next step, loading the boat. The team proceeded to Cobbs Mariner at Little Creek Harbor for the loadout. We estimated that we had something like 800 to 1,000 pounds of equipment, and that was before Quint, K4CQW, made the run to the Navy base for the adult beverage component of the logistics package. Tangier Island is a dry island. They sell no adult beverages whatsoever. However, you can bring your own. All of our land transport vehicles were unloaded at the marina, and using a large yard wagon, transported the supplies to the ship. Terry, K-I-4-R-X-C, was on board stowing the equipment through the forward hatch as it was handed to him, much like passing buckets of water at an old-fashioned fire. Everyone participated. The 3-element tri-band Yagi was strapped down on the deck, as it was a bit large to be stowed below deck. Our plan was to leave Norfolk on Wednesday afternoon with an estimated sail time of 16 hours overnight. Two of the team, Terry and Quint, would sail the boat north, and the remaining 6 personnel would drive up the eastern shore on Thursday and take the pedestrian ferry to Tangier on Thursday morning, about an hour and a half boat ride from Mononcoke, Virginia. We dropped the lines securing the boat on schedule, fired up the diesel, and backed out of the slip into the channel. Once in the channel, Quint manned the tiller, and the Tangier expedition was officially underway. We were traveling at about 2 miles per hour out of the harbor under power. Terry secured a boat for open water sailing and prepared to put up the sails. One is sailing due north, coming out of Little Creek Mariner, and as luck would have it, Tangier Island lies due north of Norfolk, Virginia, our starting point. As soon as we cleared the Mariner, we got into deeper water. Terry hoisted the sails. This boat has a main sail supported by a 35-foot metal mast. There'll be more to follow on this lightning rod, and a smaller sail called the jib sail that is in the forward part of the boat, better known as the bow. With the sails up, we shut down the motor and were underway on the wind. Initially, we were making 3 to 4 miles per hour through the water and on our way across the Chesapeake Bay towards Cape Charles and the eastern shore. My previous comment about due north perhaps needs explaining for those less well-versed in sailing. Sailboats underway don't sail in straight lines. Besides tacking against the wind, you have to change your course to avoid channel markers, buoys, and, of course, big ships that are in the main shipping channels. Large container ships and tankers destined for Norfolk, Baltimore, and other places in the bay move at speeds faster than 3 or 4 miles per hour. The voyage started out smoothly and continued that way through the afternoon and night. Terry has both HF and VHF ham radio installed, so we were able to maintain excellent communications with our support team. Ron Young, W8RJL, was there for us on HF, as well as numerous other hams that were following our progress up the bay. We also had, between the two of us, 4 handheld walkie-talkie radios for backup VHF marine band and amateur band communications. Cell phones are normally useless after 10 to 12 miles out in the open water. Radio communications is what you have left. We sailed through the night at a good pace, in fact, at a great pace, often hitting close to 7 miles an hour under sail. The tiller was on autopilot, and it was a star-studded night with great visibility, following seas, current that helps increase speed, and good wind direction. As a result, we were in close proximity to Tangier Island within 14 hours, instead of the 16 hours predicted. The water around Tangier is shallow. Since Terry's boat has a 4-foot keel, shallow water is not your friend. And since we arrived at 4:30 a.m., without experience in the local currents and the channel entrance, we decided to drop the anchor and grab a couple of hours of sleep. That done, we were awake again at 7 a.m., and to our dismay, discovered that we had anchored within a few hundred feet of a massive number of crab pots. Besides crabbing as the livelihood of the bulk of the islanders, you do not want to run over one of those crab pots and have it tangle your prop. Terry, not only an excellent sailor, but also an excellent chef, prepared a hot breakfast in the little galley. Soon after, we pulled anchor and started to run into Tangier Channel around 8 a.m. We were under power at 1 to 2 miles per hour with a not-so-friendly current coming into the bow while going to dock at Park's Marina. At this point, one may have a vision of what a yacht slant sailboat mariner looks like. One can forget about that. This approach isn't anything like you may have ever seen. Navigating a 27-foot boat in current when you have to turn perpendicular to the current takes a unique skill set, and Terry has the full set. We had to back and fill a bit, but we were able to get the bow into the slip with the help of persons on the dock, who held our bow line while we secured the other lights needed to keep the boat stationary. We got on the dock and tracked down the dockmaster owner, one Mr. Milton Parks. Milton, a 78-year-old island resident his entire life, retired from crabbing at the age of 75. He said he was a bit long in the tooth to continue that career. We told Mr. Park who we were and why we were there. He offered to take us to the Bayview Inn bed and breakfast, at which we would be staying for the duration of our operation. All transportation in Tangier is either by foot, golf cart, and or moped, as other types of motorized transportation is incompatible with Tangier. Milton has a 2-man golf cart, and 3 of us were crammed into it. Still, we managed to get to the B&B and let them know we were on the island. Mr. Park then gave us a tour of the island that most tourists will never see. Also, at a speed most will never experience either. Now this is to be continued in the next issue of the Quadessentially Wireless Association for Fall 2010. This piece again is titled QCW Expedition to Tangier Island by Quint Webb, K4CQW, and it's edited by Vic Culver, W4VIC. Ladies and gentlemen, this completes the recording of the September 2010 issue of the Quadessentially Wireless Association Journal. But first, I want to remind you, in closing, about the Quadessentially Wireless Association need for new membership, how to get members signed up, and all the details that go with that. If you're receiving, which you should be, a copy of this Quadessentially Wireless Association Journal, on near the last page, page 56, there is a complete form informing you or any of those interested and qualified to be members of the QCWA how to be involved. It also includes, of course, email addresses, telephone numbers, whatever you really need to give us at the headquarters, a schedule of membership fees very easily spelled out for you or for them as you pass the information along. So take a few moments as you complete listening to this recording and do a little more for the organization itself by encouraging others to join if they've been ham radio operators signed at least 25 years ago. Your reader, my name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF. November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH geographic location is in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. We're about 50 miles south of Boston, right on Buzzards Bay, near New Bedford, Massachusetts. I'd be very willing to listen to any comments, criticism, constructive or otherwise, if you choose to send me. You can email me at my call sign, lowercase, N1BLF, jeff@comcast.net, and I'll respond back to you in like kind. You've been listening to a digest format reading of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal for summer of 2010. If you'd like to be in touch with our business office, it's the Quarter Century Wireless Association Incorporated, P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts 01705. You can call them at area 508-405-1930, fax them at 508-405-1965, or you can email the general manager at lowercase qcwagm@rcn.com. The editor of the magazine is Douglas Walbridge. The webmaster, Bob Roski, N0UF. This voice recording is a production of the Courage Handyham System in cooperation with and a coordination of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Incorporated. It is for the use of eligible Handyham and QCWA members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. If you'd like to contact Handyhams themselves, you can call area 763-520-0512 or email lowercase handyham, that's one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, @courage.org. The Handyham website is www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. Call November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot, N1BLF 73. Have a great summer season.